Thank you for downloading from Digital Mindfulness. This is episode 59. Welcome to Digital Mindfulness. I'm your host, Laurent Sampofo. Today we're here with Dr. Brandisha Tynes, Associate Professor of Education and Psychology at the USC Rossier School of Education. Brandisha's research focuses on youth experiences with digital media, the academic and socio-emotional outcomes, and also equity in digital literacy, including empowering uses of digital tools for underrepresented youth. Brandisha is also the creator of the app Rate My Media, which is a crowdsourcing rating website that gives people the chance to rate all kinds of biased media. And this content can be rated on levels of equity, inclusion, learning, and also the general quality of the content. Brandisha has also published widely in academic journals and mainstream media outlets such as the New York Times, Los Angeles Times, and Newsweek. In the show, we're going to talk about the impact of cyberbullying on adolescents and adults, and why people bully and troll in the first place. You should listen to this episode if you want to understand how to deal with cyberbullying, how to spot the signs in someone you care about, and why it exists in the first place. But first off, welcome to Digital Mindfulness. We bring together the best teachers and thought leaders to teach you how to be your best self in an age of digital distraction and information overload, both at work and in your personal life. If you're new to our show, then the best place to find out much more about what we do is to visit digitalmindfulness.net/start, which has a collection of some required listening podcasts where we discuss everything from becoming more focused in a distracted world to habit building, overcoming digital distraction, cyberbullying, internet addiction, online influence, and much, much more. Okay, enjoy the show with Dr. Brandisha Tynes. So Brandisha, welcome to the show, to Digital Mindfulness. It's fantastic to have you here. And I'm wondering if we can just start with you telling us a little bit about not only your journey towards focusing on cyberbullying, but just telling us more why you decided to focus on cyberbullying and also racism online.
I went to UCLA and I was working on my PhD and had the great fortune of working with Patricia Greenfield. And at the time, she had gotten a grant, a large NSF grant, to study sexual identity and how it gets expressed in chat. And this was about 2000, 2001 or so. And we were all sitting around in a research team meeting and we're supposed to, you know, pick out examples in this transcript, this chat transcript of, you know, people expressing themselves in terms of their, you know, sexuality and sexual identities. And so I noticed there were tons of racial epithets in the transcript and, you know, the N-word, monkey and things like that. And I thought, this is what I'm going to study. And so that's kind of been my work for the past 15 years, kind of understanding the racial landscape that adolescents navigate online and how those experiences are related to the outcomes that I most care about, which is mental health, academic performance, and
Now we've had a few guests on the show that were a little bit reserved about making that link between exposure to negative online content and mental health problems. But was that very clear to you when you started the relationship between racism online and mental health problems?
Yes. So it was during a study we were doing on monitored versus unmonitored chat rooms. And so we were looking at AOL and Yahoo chat rooms, probably way before a lot of your listeners' time. And we found that, you know, in these half-hour transcripts, there were kids who would say, this one example I remember was a Latina who was basically victimized for the entire half hour. And I noticed how she responded by saying, you know, in Spanish, "I don't like racists," and, you know, "Please stop. This is giving me heart palpitations." And that's when I thought, wow, I need to study, you know, the mental health consequences of these experiences. And then I, you know, was kind of off to develop a measure of, you know, to assess the experiences. And then so I was able to ultimately get a large NIH grant to study how these experiences impact adolescents over time, which was really wonderful.
Okay, so I want to come back and just talk about what cyberbullying actually is, because I think a lot of people in the audience would think they know what it means, but they would have lots of different definitions of that. So can you tell us exactly what cyberbullying is?
Sure. So the definition actually can vary from researcher to researcher, but some people would define cyberbullying as intentional or willful and repeated harm that's inflicted, you know, through an electronic device. And so you might have some researchers who kind of think that whole the notion of an experience being repeated is a little bit murky in some instances, but other folks might use the term online harassment, and those instances can just be one event. There can just be one occurrence that happened, and that would qualify as online harassment. Then you have online racial discrimination, which I study, and that is sort of being denigrated because of your race or ethnicity through the use of symbols, video, voice, images, graphic representations. It's been related to mental health in the form of depressive symptoms and anxiety. It's related to problem behavior. It's also related to academic motivation, in that if you have if you've experienced online racial discrimination, you're more likely to, over time, or you're less likely to endorse the idea that school is important, right? And so it has these very real consequences. When we think about, you know, other studies of cyberbullying victimization, we also know, just in general, we know that it's also related to suicidal ideation, right? And so we haven't actually studied suicidal ideation in our work, but if we can draw from what's been done, the work that's been done with other cyberbullying researchers, and it suggests that these experiences may have, you know, may lead to people, you know, thinking about suicide.
So I'm wondering, through your research, Brindisha, if it's ever come up exactly why people would bully someone online in the first place. Is it because of the low barrier to entry, that you can just log on from your phone or wherever and say something nasty and then put it in your pocket and forget about it again? Or is it because you don't have physical contact with someone and you don't see their physical reaction?
So I haven't actually studied people's motivation behind cyberbullying, but from, you know, other researchers, so social psychological theory suggests that people want to maintain their self-esteem. They want to have a positive sense of themselves. And oftentimes, in order to maintain that positive sense of themselves, they will denigrate others. You also have this sort of sense of perceived anonymity. And like you said, you know, they're the reduced social cues. And so, you know, that may lead to people, you know, an inability to regulate yourself and your own behavior, or, you know, some of those latent kind of negative attitudes that you may have. You may feel like you can express those attitudes because there are really few consequences.
So this whole discussion about the way that exposure to racism or to bullying online, the way that it affects your mental health, is really sobering and really quite frightening. But I'm wondering, do people feel the same way? Do we have the same impact on our mental health, even when the negative comments aren't directed at us? Like if, for example, it goes to another online avatar of ours, or if we're reading about abuse that's happening to someone else, do we still feel the same way as if it was happening to us personally?
Yes. So with my work, we make this distinction between the experiences that are directed at an individual and those experiences that are vicarious, or that people witness happening to other folks. And so we're finding that in our most recent work that even the vicarious experiences are related to some of our mental health outcomes, anxiety in particular. And so, yes, we do see both the direct forms and the vicarious forms impacting people.
So one of the other things I wanted to talk about is the way that racism interplays between online and offline, and how they manifest themselves. Because I remember receiving recently an email from Airbnb about the ways that certain hosts would discriminate on the guests that they would receive based on their race or based on, you know, what their surnames would be. And I'm wondering just if there's any insights, how does racism online interplay with how it's experienced offline?
Yes, so we're actually still trying to parse this out, what the actual differences are. First, we know that if you experience racial discrimination online, those experiences can be associated with mental health outcomes over and above the experiences you have face-to-face. So it sort of exacerbates the impact. And what we think may be happening is that, so offline you experience racial discrimination, it might be, you know, one incident, right? And you may keep recalling the incident, but online there may be a permanent record of it that you can hold, you know, have on your cell phone, and it, you know, it's potentially in your pocket, it's in your purse, right? So you're carrying the discrimination potentially with you. And if, you know, if you're repeatedly going back to the experience, and let me give you a quick example. When we asked our participants to give us examples of the online racial discrimination they were experiencing, they could pull it up on their phones. They could pull it up on their laptops, right? And so we think the fact that they have this, you know, potentially permanent record of their experiences may have, you know, more of an impact on them, or that may cause that, you know, effect that's over and above, right, what they might experience face to face. Also, the audience can be different, right? So, you know, with experiencing racial discrimination, you know, from a potential, like from a teacher, right? You know, it's your classroom, you know, or your classmates that might witness it. But, you know, online, it could be millions of people that could potentially see, witness your victimization, or see a profile that is created just to denigrate you. And we think that that may also play into, you know, some of the differences between online and offline.
So we've been saying like how there are lots and lots of different definitions of cyberbullying, and people might feel that they're being harassed online in different ways. But in general, how do people respond to cyberbullying or to racism or to being negatively targeted online?
Sure. So we're finding that adolescents are pretty savvy in terms of, you know, how to deal with cyberbullying. So they will report the incident. They often will block or unfriend the perpetrator. They tell others. They'll tell their, you know, their classmates. They're sort of less likely to talk to a parent about it, you know, for, you know, you can understand, because they fear that their devices might be taken away or restricted. And so, so folks, you know, they tell friends and they seek social support from others, which is, you know, definitely what we would want them to do.
Well, that's great, because that leads really nicely onto my next question. And that is, if someone that we care about is suffering from cyberbullying, how would we know? What are the signs that somebody is going through something awful online?
Well, one sign that you definitely want to look for is, you know, the person kind of withdrawing from, you know, computer or cell phone use, and sort of being withdrawn with you, right? Emotionally, right? They might experience kind of an overwhelming sadness or depression. They might be really agitated or moody, anxious. They you might see changes in their eating habits, their sleeping habits. Those are kind of the main signs you might want to look for. And, you know, if you see them, just start asking questions.
So you were mentioning that adolescents are quite savvy in that they just unfriend people. They just ignore them if something is going wrong online. But in general, how would you recommend people respond to being targeted or experiencing racism or bullying online?
So I think you can, there are a number of solutions or strategies that people can use. For some, the best thing for them is to, you know, block the person or unfriend. What other folks might do is, again, connect with friends. I can't stress that enough. Connect with, talk to parents about what may be happening, and, you know, having an open line of communication with parents and teachers, I think, is really important to help with, you know, these incidents when they come about. And another thing people might do with respect to the race-related experiences is to, you know, come up with counter narratives or arguments. You know, a lot of, you know, the discrimination you might witness is something, you know, people saying something that is just blatantly untrue about your group, right? And if you know your history, if you've been reading, and, you know, you can tell when something is inaccurate, it helps you to kind of develop the counter narrative that you need to basically argue in your head against, right, what the person might be saying about you.
I love that whole idea about having counter narratives, because oftentimes on online and certainly with social media, we're told all the time to speak, to share what's on your mind, what's happening right now. We're always told to talk, but very rarely are we told to listen and understand how to and where we should direct our attention online, what's important to us, where should we be focusing. And this whole idea of not only learning to listen online to what's important, but then when we see something that hurts us, to be able to understand our own story enough to insert an effective counter narrative to something is such an important skill, I think.
Absolutely. And I've seen in some of the work that I've done on just the racial landscape that individuals are navigating online. So not just adolescents, but the adults that they may be interacting with in some of the, Facebook groups that, that we found people to interact in. And so some of the groups, so people would have a conversation and someone might say something derogatory or say something, about how the media is portraying people of color, Black people in particular. And, these really sophisticated folks would interject a counter narrative. Well, that's not true because X, Y, and Z, right? Because of something they've read, or they could compare, what that person was saying to something that's happening, in some sort of international setting. And they're able to kind of, with the counter narrative, kind of dispel whatever untruth or myth that the person might have put forth. So I think they can be really valuable tools to help people to address racial discrimination and ultimately cope.
So in addition to this, Brandisha, I know that you've also developed a tool that can help people to spot and to flag negative content.
Yes, actually, it's called Rate My Media, and it's a web app. It's the world's first web app that's committed to crowdsourced ratings on equity and inclusion. And so what happens is you go to the site and you choose what form of media you'd like to rate. And it may be an article, it may be an app or film or a television show. And then you would rate it on issues of equity and inclusion, the general sort of content. And then if it's educational, you'd rate it on learning. And what we want to do with the site is ultimately change people's behaviors around the media that they consume, right? So ultimately, we want people to not accept one-dimensional representations of people of color. Ultimately, that does a disservice to people of color and to, majority groups. Right. And because if you have these one-dimensional representations and you watch them repeatedly, right, it's very easy for you to dehumanize other people. And so what we want to do is create this space, a community, a movement of people who want to see folks represented in their full humanity. And that's, definitely what we need, particularly in, this, Trump sort of climate that we're experiencing.
Agreed. Brandisha, what would you say then in a hyperconnected age are the most important human traits and how do we cultivate those?
I think there's been a lot written about empathy. And I definitely would say it's empathy and compassion. And in order for us to cultivate empathy and compassion for others, I think it's important for us to have a really rich inner life and first have that compassion for ourselves, right? And to be in touch with our spiritual selves. And what I do is, and maybe folks could try this, the loving kindness meditation. So when you are in a conversation with someone online, you know, before you act hastily, you know, just do a loving kindness meditation, right? So, you know, may you be at peace. May you be happy. May you be safe and protected. And it completely shifts the energy around, you know, any hostile energy that you might be experiencing for another person. And I think it makes you act and definitely think in a more positive and constructive way with, you know, it'll have you act and think in a more positive and constructive way in the conversations that you might be having online.
Thank you. I really like the answer. Brendisha, unfortunately, we've come to the end of the show. Where can people find out more about you and your work and connect with you?
So in order to, you can get to the media rating app at ratemymedia.org. And you can find me at dlx2.squarespace.com. And that's my digital learning and development research network page. And so you can find my email and all of that good stuff there.
Well, Brendisha, thanks so much for being a part of Digital Mindfulness. I've really enjoyed speaking with you, and it's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you for having me. This was really wonderful, and I really appreciate the work that you're doing.
Thanks for being with us today. Remember, you can connect with us on Twitter at Digital Mindful, and also on Facebook, which is just Digital Mindfulness. If you like the show, don't forget to reach out and thank Brendisha, which is at ratemymedia.org. If you find the Digital Mindfulness podcast valuable, you can support it through the website at digitalmindfulness.net/support, and also on our Patreon page. Patreon allows you to access our longer form content that we don't publish on the website or on this podcast. Your support really helps us to continue and improve the direction of the show. But there are other ways that you can support the podcast, such as leaving a review on iTunes or Stitcher, which really helps people to find the content that you find useful, or simply sharing the show if you like it with other people who might find it useful. Thank you all for listening. Until next time.